listening to Spooky Show with your host, Kate.
Beams.
He's about to walk on my computer.
Beams, do not walk on a computer. We gotta.
I can tell. He's getting ready.
It's the getting ready to walk on the computer song. Hey, Beanie, you gonna walk on the computer? Walk between the computers, my guy. Please.
There, a perfect runway.
There's a clear path. Walk around the computers. Thank you.
Thank you, Beans.
Thank you, Beans.
And welcome to Spooky Show, the spooky show, the history of the universe ever and life created in the stars and the sun and the sky.
I'm scared.
And I'm your host, Kate, and Harrison is here, too.
That's right.
And today, we're talking about the Bennington Triangle.
Don't know about it. Never heard of her.
You never heard of her?
Nope. The Chester Bennington Triangle?
It's a bit of a Bennington, and it's a bit of a triangle.
Hey, there's three sides to every triangle.
You're right about that.
And we're going to expose them all.
Yeah. So we'll get right into it. Dive right in.
Right in the middle of that isosceles triangle, baby. It's going to be an acute little story.
Not obtuse.
And not too oblong either.
All right.
Oh, don't be obtuse.
You're so obtuse.
You're sorry, obtuse.
So the Bennington Triangle is an area in southwestern Vermont, which is my favorite state.
Shout out to all our Vermonters,
love
baby.
That state. And it's centered around the Glastonbury Mountains, and it's made up of the towns Bennington, Woodford, Shaftesbury, and Somerset.
I love that they all have extremely British names.
Yeah.
Glastonbury, Stonesbury.
Shaftesbury,
Somerset.
That was a really bad accent.
Somerset.
Don't come for me. And then Glastonbury is like right in the middle.
Our millions of British listeners are going to descend upon the show.
Millions.
Millions, the entire isle.
So the Bennington Triangle got its name from an author named Joseph A. Citro because of the bizarre and unexplained disappearances of at least 5 people and as many as 10 people between the years 1945 and 1950.
Shit.
And as many as 30 in total.
And what do you think happened here?
So there have been murders too. So Joseph A. Citro is an author and a lecturer on the unexplained phenomenon of our world, including ghosts, spirits, pretty much anything supernatural, aliens,
okay.
You know.
Uh-huh.
He thinks
kind
that
of a real Demi Lovato in that way.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Singing to
spirits.
Yeah,
they're a professional spirit hunter.
Yeah, you're right. So he thinks that these bizarre disappearances could be attributed to some sort of like unworldly phenomenon.
Okay, that could be true.
And before we get into the disappearances, let's talk about the area within the Bennington Triangle. It has a pretty interesting history dating back as far as the 1700s.
Okay.
And we need to talk about Glastonbury specifically because it's at the center of all of this.
Glastonbury.
Of that triangle.
You gotta call it Glastonbury.
We're not in England.
But that's how it's pronounced.
Okay. So.
Maybe. I heard that on a podcast.
And they were talking about the one in Vermont.
No, they was talking about the one in jolly old England.
So, the town was chartered and granted by Governor Bennington Wentworth of New Hampshire in Bennington County.
Amazing name.
Yeah. In 1761. And the town was basically built on top of a mountain, and it's, like, so hard to get to even today because it's, like, more than 3,000 feet up into the mountains. You got to climb.
That's pretty
high. Like, there's no road to get up there.
Wait, you got to climb?
Yeah. Now you do?
Like, walk?
Yeah. So,
like, it's, like, walkable trail, though. It's not,
it's
not like Everest where you got to, like, hook yourself to a fucking carabiner.
No.
Okay.
So, Glastonbury and Somerset.
That's climbing.
They were once both thriving mining, logging, and industrial communities since there were so many trees because it was mountains.
If there's nature there, we must destroy it for money.
Exactly. And while thriving as a logging area, the town of Glastonbury essentially had, it literally was the smallest town. It had one schoolhouse, a general store, a boarding home for the mill workers, and some kilns for logging.
Okay.
And those things are like still up. But oh, that's abandoned. Cool. Yeah. So then in 1872, a railway trolley was built up the mountain to aid with, like, getting there, because people didn't want to walk all the way up that thing, so they right. built this little railway trolley, and it was the steepest railroad ever built in the United States at that time.
That's cool. Cool, right? Cool, fun fact. Cool, yeah. right?
Love that one. So the population around 1880 was now at about 250 people, and the towns surrounding Glastonbury were so dependent on it for wood, and, you know, so it's thriving, but then soon it is not. Then, of course, it has its fall from grace, because they had farmed most of the mature trees, so they were running out, and they couldn't really make wood anymore, and the soil was completely eroded from all the logging. So, right. economically, they just started dropping dramatically. So, they tried to go for, like, ooh, let's be a tourism spot. Like, let's be the spot to go on vacation so they could get money. So, they tried to be, like, a mountain resort. And in the summer of 1898, they built a dance hall with a dining room and a casino. It was called, like, the Glastonbury Inn. And a hatchery for trout so they could cook fancy dinners for all the people and get people coming. But then a massive flood came through the town and destroyed a lot of the railway. So now there's no transportation and people can't get there. So all the bridges were destroyed. Like, people just couldn't get there anymore. So there were multiple attempts to get it going again, but then there was a smallpox outbreak at the Glastonbury lumber camp, and it stopped all the rebuilding efforts in 1903. So the townspeople basically just decided to leave and start over somewhere else. Like, we gotta go, because we can't leave or, like, get back up the mountain. There's nothing here anymore. So now most of Glastonbury now is pretty much untouched, and it's just remote, like, wilderness. By 1937, the town was considered pretty much uninhabited, and according to the 2010 census, a whole 8 people were reported living there. So
that is fucking scary and fucked up.
Yeah, in Somerset, I think it was 2 people.
No.
Yeah. So it's just, like, literally.
So they're, like, self-sufficient living. Yeah. Like, true Appalachian.
Yeah, I mean, but they maybe live that's in, not like, Appalachian houses. Area.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, that's, like, you know, you got to be self-sustainable with your food supplies. Yep. You got to be self-sustainable with your water, your sewage, your...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my fucking God. Your yeah. wireless internet. Like, how are you getting Wi-Fi up there?
So, Glastonbury...
Excuse me, how am I going to be able to watch my movies and videos?
How will I watch my Netflix?
How will I watch my videos?
So, Glastonbury is now considered an unincorporated town because of the low population. That's what... It's
what does that mean?
It has low population.
But what does unincorporated mean? I mean, that there's no just room for corporate business there? Is yeah. that what that means? Okay. Interesting.
It's owned by the U.S. National Forest Service now.
Oh, okay. So it's, like, literally government land yeah. now. Yeah.
And if you go there, you could still see, like I said, like, well, you could see the 3, like, tiny homes where a few of these people live. And apparently they all have these handwritten signs outside of their homes that are, like, really threatening. Like, they're, like, telling people not to park there. And it's things like, don't park here or else. It's like...
You can do slash your tires.
I know, right?
I guess there's no police, so...
So let's take
they
it...
They are law and they are door-door.
Let's take it way, way, way back before Glastonbury was a town. So we could talk more about... It's bad luck, I guess we could say. So the Native Americans in the area actually considered the mountains in Glastonbury, they considered them cursed, and they only used it for burying those who have passed away.
Oh, so it's a huge Indian burial ground.
Yes!
That's fucking insane.
Correct.
So, like, classic Americanized yeah. Mythicalization of... Indigenous people.
Yep. So they said, the Native Americans said they would never step foot on it unless it's, like, bury their loved ones. So apparently the forest is...
Hey, hold on, just 1 second. I said Indian burial ground earlier. I just want to say, with respect, did not mean it like that. That's just the common vernacular I have heard growing up. And it's, of course, Indigenous people.
You are correct. So there, the forest is so dense that it almost creates this just, like, suffocating silence. people say. The Native Americans told stories of hairy wild men and, like, other strange creatures in the woods and said the four winds met there in an internal struggle.
Okay.
Yeah. So another interesting belief people had about this mountain is that it had this, like, enchanted stone on top of it that could swallow people whole.
So, like, it had a mouth?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Apparently, those who went to the top and stood on this rock were just suddenly swallowed whole and never seen again.
Damn, what'd that rock do?
This area also has a history of a ton of strange occurrences dating all the way back to the 1800s.
Damn, what that rock do, though?
There have been reports of strange lights being seen in the sky, weird sounds with no explanations, and odd smells coming from the mountain. And there's also thought to be a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch roaming around the area. Of course.
Yeah, of course, of course. Where there is one, there is often more.
Where there's a forest, there's a Bigfoot.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, they got big feet. Where else are they going to walk?
Yeah.
The street?
Not in the street. Reports dating back to the early 19th century report a hairy monster, or what locals call, I guess, the Bennington Monster, that was over 6 feet tall. And apparently, the Bennington Monster rushed at a horse carriage carrying a ton of people.
So just over 6 feet tall, so it could just be, like, a big guy, a big hairy guy.
No, but then, listen, because later
Because usually I just feel like Bigfoot, it's like, oh, it's like a 10-foot behemoth.
Well, people in this horse carriage later said that he was probably, like, 8 feet.
Okay, so, okay. Yeah, that's pretty scary. Yeah, so those are big numbers.
There's people going up in horse carriage to Glastonbury. This is back when they had, like, transportation. And Glastonbury was an actual town. And this thing just, like, knocked it on the horse carriage on its side. And apparently, it was, like, dark and raining that day, too. And so after knocking it over, the driver, like, gets out of the carriage with his lantern. And this monster walks right up into the light of the lantern. And the people said that all they could see was that he was over 8 feet tall, completely covered in dark hair, with big bugging eyes. And they said it just toppled over that stagecoach and then just walked right back into the woods. No big deal.
That's legitimately terrifying.
Yeah. So they saw large footprints.
Yeah, that's the scary.
Large footprints were in the mud after that, too. So this is when the whole idea of the Bennington Monster, like, became a thing, when these people saw it. People still report to hear roars and moans coming from the woods. And another recent sighting of this monster was actually in 2003.
Okay.
Yeah. A guy named Ray Dufrenzy said he was driving near the mountain and saw, like, a giant thing over 7 feet tall just walking in the woods, and that it had, like, dark hair all over it, and several witnesses in the area came forward and said that they saw it too. So.
Okay, okay.
So all of what we just talked about, the strange occurrences and whatnot, they can't really be proven. They were all just old wives' tales or mystical stories that have been passed down generations. Except for the 2003 Bennington Monster sighting. Like, that some guy actually said he saw. But
it was only 20 years ago-ish.
Yeah. But however, there is, like, very real and very scary phenomenon happening in that area.
We talked about UFOs too, right?
Yeah. And that's like we didn't really explicitly talk about them, but the weird
flying
lights
objects,
in the sky
yeah.
and the noises are some people attribute to
that. I saw people claiming they were seeing UFOs in LA the other day.
They probably were.
But big fucking ones.
Oh.
Like, looked like they were straight out the trailer of Nope.
I wonder if it's advertising.
It might be a filter. It also looked like a filter a little bit.
Oh, I don't like that. That's tricky. They're tricking us.
That is tricky. I was using tricky the other day in context, and I was like, damn, I feel like we use tricky between the two of us a good amount, but not very often outside of that.
You think we say tricky a lot?
Like, in describing situations, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of tricky situations
yeah.
out there. I don't know.
Or complex things. It's a nicer way to say complex.
Yeah, we don't sound tricky. So pretentious.
Yeah, we also don't sound like we're just, like, lying, you know? Because every time I hear people be like, it's a very complex issue. I'm like, you don't care about this at all. You care about exactly one side of this. Anyway.
All that to say.
So the Bennington Triangle is most popularly known for its bizarre unexplained disappearances and its murders. So, like, that part is true. All the missing people and the murders are true. So we're going to start with the beginning with Amoida. April 4th, 1982, a mill worker in Fayetteville, which is a part of Glastonbury, his name was Henry McDowell, he murdered John Crowley just out of nowhere.
Did you hear? Henry McDowell murdered John Crowley.
He just, like, lost it in the mill one day.
He lost it in the mill one day.
And crushed his skull with a rock or a piece of wood.
That's the most Irish thing I've ever fucking heard in my entire life. You crushed his skull with a fucking rock or a piece of wood in the mill.
It just went crazy.
He was mad about the mill. The workers.
So Henry was later found in North Norwalk, Connecticut. So
what?
Yeah, he ran. Where he confessed immediately and told law enforcement that he had voices in his head telling him to do it. So
they were saying do it.
He was committed to Vermont State Asylum in Waterbury. But he escaped.
I'll get out of there. So out of that penitentiary.
He snuck onto a railway car and then he just vanished. And he was never seen again.
You'll never see this face ever again.
I don't know why you're being Irish.
Because it's the most Irish two names I've ever heard.
I guess.
John, what is it? What was it again? What's the last name?
Why, you don't remember? You're not listening?
I'm listening. I know it's... Hey. McDowell, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So then, in 1897, 40-year-old John Harbour was murdered in his deer camp.
No, that's not an Irish name, so I won't be doing the accent.
I think our listeners are grateful for that.
Hey, they like when
so,
I do comedy.
He was very well liked. He had tons of friends in the small town of Glastonbury, and he was out hunting with his brother and his friend, and they were separated a little bit at one point. And suddenly John's brother and his friend heard a rifle blast, and they heard John yell, "I've been shot!"
Oh, so and, you gave him a British accent.
Well, because isn't I've been shot...
Call an ambulance. Call an ambulance.
And it wasn't them who shot him. So they heard this. They searched everywhere for him, and they couldn't find him anywhere. He just vanished. But then, 11 a.m. the following morning, they finally found him when they spotted his legs behind a cedar tree, and his gun was neatly placed next to him, and there were, like, no drag marks or anything. He was just sitting up against a tree.
Okay.
But it was determined that he was shot somewhere else and then put under that tree.
Poor guy.
So we don't know who, and those are the two known murders that happened in Glastonbury.
All right.
So.
And again, population around about, not at that time, but two now.
Yeah. And
It was pretty low then too, right? I imagine.
In the 1800s, it was about like 250.
Okay, so. Still pretty small, but big for that time, I guess.
And like, so we have this one murder where this guy just seemingly went crazy and killed another, and then we have this one where I don't know what happened to this guy who got shot and was just placed against a tree, but so
I probably heard he was doing an Irish accent on a podcast.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the huge amount of disappearances now, and some of these are so weird.
Okay.
It's crazy. So there were at least 5 and at most 10 between 1945 and 1950, and a lot of these all weirdly happen between 3 to 4 p.m.
See, now I would not have been killed because that's like my nap time.
So that's
I would have been safe in this situation. So this got a lot less scary for me.
So we are going to start in 1943 with Carl Herrick. It's November 11th.
No accent for that.
November 11th, 1943. 37-year-old Carl was an experienced hunter and outdoorsman. Experienced.
Okay.
And he went into the Glastonbury Woods to go hunting with his cousin Henry. Also a very experienced hunter and outdoorsman.
Okay, so we got 2 experienced hunters and outdoorsmen.
And at some point, Henry and Carl became separated. So Henry went back to the campsite at some point, and Carl just wasn't there. Like, he wasn't coming back. He never made it back. So Henry immediately called the police, and a massive search party started. For 3 days, they combed the forest and surrounding areas and found nothing. But then after 3 days, Henry was the one to stumble upon Carl lying in the woods. He runs up to him and sees that his hunting rifle was leaning up against a tree, unfired, like not even fired once. And it was like a ways away from him because he was on the ground like far away from his hunting rifle.
And it was like propped up nicely.
Yeah. And he had no outward marks of trauma.
He was just dead?
Yeah. Like, no visible signs of trauma. So, they thought maybe it was, like, a health issue.
Yeah, maybe he had a heart attack.
But then they found what they thought were huge bear tracks. But they...
Yeah, but they didn't find any signs of mauling him. Bears will fucking rip you to shreds.
They thought, like, they did think that the tracks looked too big to be a bear's.
Did he die in shock from seeing Bigfoot?
When they did his autopsy, they found that he had been squeezed to death. His ribs had broken and punctured his lungs, and that's how he died.
That's fucking scary.
So, this may seem weird, but, like, this happens with bears, and this is insane, but I just listened to a This Is Actually Happening episode about this, where a guy saw his girlfriend get, like, pushed up against, like, a tree by a bear and died. Because she got crushed.
Because it crushed her. Oh. Yeah.
So this is possible. That episode was really, really, really hard to listen to. I forget what it's called.
But getting attacked by a wild animal, one of my top fears, I think, actually.
Yeah,
if I'm to be realistic about it, like, I like my chances against a couple things, but there's not many.
Right.
Like a bear, I'm like, I'm just dead. I'm dead.
It's gonna be
shark, I'm dead.
So painful too, because you're just awake.
Yeah, no, it's fucked up. I mean, hopefully the best thing you could hope for is that bear just smushes you to death instantly.
Right,
you know, and, like, pops your heart or whatever.
And that bear...
Because you don't want to fucking...
yeah.
Out. Like, that's one of the worst ways to go, I imagine. Punctured lung like that.
Yeah. So, the next one happened in 1945 on November 12th. 74-year-old Mitty Rivers was a mountain guide. So he had experience, and on the day of his disappearance, he was leading a group of four hunters up Glastonbury Mountain.
And what was they doing?
And when he was leading the group back to the campsite along the Long Trail Road, which is an area in Hell Hollow in the mountains.
Okay, yeah, very cursed name, very cursed name.
He just, like, got ahead of the group a little bit, like, just enough so he was, like, barely out of their sight. Like, he just started... walking ahead a little bit. And within that very short window of time, he just vanished and was never seen again.
That's insane.
Like, literally within seconds. He probably didn't get lost because, you know, he was a mountain guide. So, like, I don't know what that is. A search was conducted after this, and there was no sign of him anywhere. And many people thought because he was so experienced as an outdoorsman, like, if he was lost, he'd be able to survive and just come back, but he never did. And he also got a physical, like, right before this, and he was in perfect health condition, so it wasn't that. Since his disappearance, over 300 locals and U.S. Army soldiers just, like, looked through the wilderness for 8 days and, like, searched extensively and found nothing. And he's just vanished. So that was in 1945. The next one, December 1st, 1946, an 18-year-old named Paula Jean Weldon also went missing.
Amazing name.
Yeah, that was a good name. She was a sophomore at Bennington College and was out for a hike on the Long Trail as well to explore the mountain. She was seen heading onto the trail by many people at around 4 p.m., including an employee at the Bennington Banner. I think that was, like, the paper who gave her directions. Yeah. Drivers who gave her rides to the mountain. She was hitchhiking. And other hikers who actually said that they were worried she wasn't dressed warm enough to be hiking in the mountains.
Oh.
So there was also apparently an elderly couple who were about 100 yards behind her on the trail who saw her. She was wearing a red coat, so she was, like, very easy to spot.
Sure.
When she walked by
someone, pretty smart, like, in the woods.
Yeah, people remembered her. According to the elderly couple, they saw Paula, like, they're, like, 100 yards behind her. They see her turn the corner on the trail, and by the time they reached that same corner, she was gone. So she just vanished also within minutes. When she didn't show up to her classes at her college that Monday, a massive search was done on the mountain to find her. Over 1,000 people combed the area. The FBI got involved. They even posted a, like, $5,000 reward for her safe return.
Whoa.
But once again, they found absolutely zero trace of her anywhere. But this is interesting. At the time of her disappearance, Vermont did not have a state police force. So they only had like a state investigator who was put on the case. And a lot of people, including Paula's dad, criticized the methods used in this case, which was actually like what led to them putting together an actual state police force.
Huh.
That's interesting.
That's a fun fact.
But still, nothing was ever found, and nobody knows what happened to her.
Weird.
Weird, right?
She has so many witnesses prior.
Yes. And the couple wasn't that far away from her. Like, she turned a corner, and by the time they reached, they didn't see her anymore. So now we have another one. 3 years later, on December 1st, 1949, 68-year-old James E. Telford. This is the weirdest.
Okay, hit me.
Weirdest one. So he was a veteran who was a resident of the Veteran Soldiers Home, and he went to St. Albans, Vermont to visit some relatives.
Okay.
After this, he boarded the bus back home to the soldiers home, and people saw him on the bus. They spoke with him, including the driver. The driver confirmed that James was in his seat the entire time. Then when the Bennington stop came, he was just gone. He disappeared in between stops.
Just vanished?
On the bus. He didn't get off the bus. He literally vanished. His luggage and ticket were still sitting on his seat. This is real. Like, you can look up the reports of this.
No, I refuse to believe this is actually real. I'm good. I'd rather live in a world where this is not the kind of thing that happens.
Passenger said he literally vanished while sitting inside the bus.
Absolutely not. I do not like that. I fucking do not like that.
And the timing of when he would have suddenly vanished.
He's probably running around this version of Earth.
The timing of when he would have like vanished is right when they would have been driving through the Bennington Triangle.
So are we saying this is like a Bermuda Triangle type place?
Pretty much.
Okay.
So next. Yeah, that one crazy. Are you looking it up?
I mean, I'm looking at some stuff related to this. Yes, I want to see about it.
His name is James E. Telford.
Well, I'm just like, this. No. This defies. No.
Are you seeing it?
Telfer. Yeah, I'm seeing this. I don't like this.
It's weird, right?
I don't fucking like this, actually. Just like, is this him? Is this a picture of him on the bus?
Mm-hmm.
And this man disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So next, almost a year later, on October 12th, 1950, the fourth disappearance happened to an 8-year-old little boy named Paul Jepson. So Paul was last seen by his mother. He was like, they went to the family farm to feed the pigs, and he just ended up staying in the family pickup truck in the bed, just like playing, while his mother left to go like feed the pigs. She was only gone for about an hour, and by the time she got back to check on Paul, he was nowhere to be found. So once again, search efforts were immediately conducted, but there were no traces of him anywhere. And when he went missing, he was also wearing a bright red jacket that would have made him easily visible. But he was never seen again. Apparently, when investigators brought their sniffer dogs in, they tracked Paul's scent to a nearby highway where it like suddenly stopped. So it is possible like maybe he wandered off and someone picked him up. But the place the scent was traced to is actually the same place that Paula was last seen. So after multiple searches were conducted without any traces of him coming up, the attention was actually turned to the parents, and people thought that they fed him to the pigs. But during an interview, Paul's father said that days before his disappearance, Paul had actually been talking about the mountains nonstop. Like, he was saying that he was drawn to the mountains and that he needed to go in them.
No.
He said that it was, like, the lore
of... It was calling to me.
The lore of the mountains that pulled his son away. And then that's where he went missing.
That's very scary.
Yeah. So now, 16 days later, there was another disappearance. On October 28th, 1950, 53-year-old Frida Langer disappeared. This is the last of these five very strange disappearances. Frida was an experienced hiker and a survivalist who knew the mountains and the trails very well. And on the day of her disappearance, she and her cousin Herbert Elsner left the campsite near Somerset Reservoir, where they and their family were staying to go on a hike on the long trail. So after hiking about half a mile, Frida actually fell into a stream. So she decided to head back to the campsite to change her clothes. And she said to her cousin, like, stay right there. I'll be right back. I'll catch up. Because they're only half a mile away from the campsite. Her husband was still at the campsite because he hurt his knee. But Frida just, like, never made it back to camp. So therefore never caught up with her cousin. So when Herbert realized that she never came back, he went to the campsite and realized that her husband hadn't seen her either, and neither had anyone else. So during the span of a half a mile, she completely vanished without anyone seeing a thing.
Half a mile?
Yeah. Right away, there were several search efforts set to go out and find her. They used helicopters from the Connecticut Coast Guard and the U.S. Army. They used an aircraft from a local citizen and had over 300 searchers. But despite that, no trace found. There was no trace of her. But then on May 12th, 1951, 6 months after her disappearance, Frida's body was actually found in the Somerset Reservoir. What was strange, though, was that this area had been searched extensively and repeatedly for months after she went missing, and she was found in the wide open of the river. So she was very clearly placed there. Like, police are certain she was placed there. Plus, her remains were in such bad shape that they couldn't even determine her cause of death, and no autopsy was ever performed, weirdly. And then just quickly, in October of 1981, three hunters in these woods disappeared and were never found. To this day, people will go into the woods now and say they come out like very overwhelmingly dizzy and confused. And at weird points of time, they'll have like weird points of time that they can't remember what was happening in there. People do think that, you know, maybe during this 5-year period, there was, like, a serial killer on the loose, which is possible,
I guess. That's possible, yeah, but it doesn't explain how fast a lot of the stuff
exactly.
happened.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of similarities between all these disappearances, too. Like, they all happened in this 5-year span. They were all pretty much in the same area, like, on the Long Trail. They all happened during the times of 3 to 4, and they were all in, like, the similar time of year. They all happened October to December.
Okay.
And yeah, other than that, there are no connection between the victims themselves, though. So, as for theories, like I said, people think one person is responsible for all of these disappearances during this time period. Like, maybe someone was going around and picking these random victims, a serial killer or something. They think maybe it's an extremely skilled outdoorsman who was taking people by the trail and the highway. It would have had to be someone who was extremely familiar with the area. And this kind of works for like Frida's body, since it was obviously placed there in a place that was like previously searched. Uh-huh. But it doesn't account for those who went missing, like you said, like close to other people. Like, they would have heard something at least.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of stuff where in this entire thing where it's like, well, someone had to have XYZ because
right.
It's just so inexplicable. Like,
yeah,
the turn the corner and vanish thing. I was trying to think about that, and that sounds like an energy force, just like
right.
blasting someone, you know, or the guy on the bus.
That one I don't.
That might be just like straight up. He's cellularly disintegrated, and like I'm still kind of wrapping my head around the implications of that, but.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to, you know, not think about that one too much before I end up in the loony bin. Walking up to you like, did you know a guy on a bus just literally cellularly disintegrated and it's actually a true story?
And also the victims are so different.
Like, go to fucking the loony bin.
Yeah.
Like the old school version. I'm not talking about, of course, the psychiatric hospital.
The victims are so different, and that's not really like what a serial killer does. So the next theory and the largest theory is that it's something paranormal or supernatural. As we know, this mountain is very well known for being spiritual and cursed and mysterious. And as far back as the 1700s, people were reporting seeing strange things all over this mountain. So people think evil spirits are responsible. the main thing pointing to this theory is the people just suddenly vanishing, the history and the rumors of it being cursed, of course. And, you know, there are people on that mountain who have been buried there for centuries. So
and now I'm sure even weirder stuff goes on, and but it's just not documented because there's only eight people in the whole thing.
Yeah, no one's really going there. The next theory is that something extraterrestrial is responsible.
Yeah, that's what I would kind of guess.
Yeah, arguments for this are the reports dating back from centuries ago that spoke of strange lights, weird sounds, weird odors.
And it's high
coming
above
from the mountain.
Ground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of spirit there because there's a bunch of dead bodies buried there.
Right. Another theory is that they also come to the elements because all of these disappearances happened between October and December. And apparently when...
where would they be?
Well, when experiencing hypothermia, people might do something called terminal burrowing, which is like a survival instinct that causes people to find a small space and like a remote location and just huddle there for warmth. And it can get... you know, the person out of wind and slow the process of hypothermia. So maybe people are just like ducked somewhere. I mean, this usually happens when hypothermia has already set in though. So.
Yeah, but it wouldn't explain the bus.
Yeah. And there are a lot of unmarked mine shafts on this mountain from like the logging and mining days.
People just so fell into, they
could
think?
Explain why people disappeared so fast or they went and burrowed in there. I don't know. But this doesn't work for all the victims also, like the bus, Frida, yeah. So to this day, people will go into these woods now and say they, like I said, confused, and people still won't wear red when they go in there because it's like a superstition. If you wear like something red, you'll disappear. And that's all I got.
Well, that's fucking weird, and there's elements of that that are going to fuck me up maybe for the rest of my life. So
you're welcome.
I'm really upset about the fact that a guy just disappeared off a bus.
Yep, his luggage and ticket and everything were still in his seat.
No.
Disappeared in between stops.
That one, that is not cool.
I know.
Well, thanks for a great tale.
You're welcome.
No, that one was cool. That was cool.
Yeah. We were due for a paranormal spooky.
Yeah, and the fun thing about the paranormal ones is that they're generally pretty low stakes.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm kind of confused. We got John in the spot. He's a little confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, hold on. Can we rap and then we can talk, or do you want to record? Okay. Whatever. Let's rap and then.
Okay. Well, follow the show on Instagram at Spooky Show Pod. And
tell us what you think about this, because obviously it's gotten the conversation going around here.
Yeah. And what else? Rate and review on Apple Podcasts, please, Harrison.
Listen to Baseball Hat.
Have the best day of your entire life. Thank you for listening. Bye. Oh, wait, I said best day. Best week of your entire life. Bye.
Have the best life of your entire life.